Hello, you're listening to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast, presented by Brandon Elliott. This show will be going over all aspects of real estate investing and is intended to educate, motivate, and prepare you to take action on your first or next real estate investment. For more information, please visit BrandonElliottInvestments.com. Thank you for listening and enjoy.
Welcome back, everyone, to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Mr. Brandon Elliott. I'm excited today. We have a guest that's been in the game for the last 20 years, really focuses on passive income streams, and we're going to deep dive into Renters Nation and what that really looks like these days and the craziness with that, but also how you can retire early by starting either a business or real estate investing and really the economics behind that and what's going on in this crazy world that we live in today. The positive and all of the nitty gritty in between. I want to be able to cover it here first and foremost. But if you have not already subscribed yet, make sure you do that right now. First and foremost, you'll get the newest notification every single Monday. Appreciate all the subscriptions, all the love and the 5-star reviews that are coming in left and right. You guys are amazing. Keep those coming. Love you guys. Appreciate it and share this out. But Tony, what's happening, man? How are we doing today?
We're doing fantastic, Brandon. Thanks for having me on. And wow, that laundry list that you shared of things we're going to cover, I mean, I don't know how long this podcast is going to go, but man, this can go like 3, 4, 5 hours if you want to cover all that.
That's right. Yeah. We're going to see what we can squeeze out of you in the next hour, but I'm excited and very blessed to have you on here. Where are you at today? I know you go back and forth between Florida and New Hampshire, correct?
Yeah. Today I'm in New Hampshire. I have a multifamily base up here in New Hampshire. So I come up here pretty frequently. I hail from the Northeast, hence the Boston hat and the Boston accent. So
come on.
I haven't been able to ditch the Boston accent ever. So I also spend some time in Florida, grown the portfolio down in Florida with some larger apartment complexes through the partnering that we're doing down there. So yeah, we're mixing it up a bit and still investing in real estate, even though people are, you know, crying about the high rates and you know, the price of housing. And I mean, we're still in the game. We're still doing stuff. So if it cash flows, it's for us.
That's right. Yeah, I always say, you know, when everybody's complaining about the rates and they're sitting on the sidelines, I think it's the worst mistake anybody could do. When, in fact, if you could buy right today and it still cash flows, lock in that rate. If you're a dooms gloom type of person and you think the rate's going to keep going up, great. You just locked in your rate and you're saving money. On the alternative, if it goes down, like we're, you know, we're hoping for and you're optimistic, then great. You can refinance it and you're still doing well. But buy today, buy it right from the start. And you can make money, whether it's 20, 30%, 8%, 5%, 2%. You know, I think we got a little too spoiled the last 10 years when the rates were ridiculously, historically low. But
you're right. I mean, you know, some folks will, like some of our investors will be like, you know, well, what if real estate, you know, corrects? What if there's a 20% correction? You know, they're worried about their investment. And I'm like, look, we're not buying this multifamily to sell in 6 months.
Yeah,
that's not our goal. So yes, the market is going to do this ups and downs, and that's okay. We expect it. But as long as it, to your point, as long as it cash flows today and we have a solid investment that cash flows today, day one, you know, I'm not worried about what happens tomorrow. We're going to continue to pay the bills and pay out investors and do all the right things, you know, and then in another, you know, 5 years, we'll see where we are, you know, if it's appreciated or if it's still, you know, cash flowing, you know, extremely well. And we've reduced our debt payments because we've refied or done a cash out, whatever it is. We look at the situation in 5 years and we say, you know, should we still hold it or do we sell it at that point for the investors?
Yep. And at the end of the day, if you really are on the sidelines waiting for these rates to drop, wait till they do and watch everybody and their grandmother jump back into the game that can afford it, and then watch all those prices start skyrocketing up. So, you know, you got to think logically here. It doesn't even make sense. Get in while you can. And there's just still not enough supply. The demand is still high. So be mindful of that. But I love it. You know, Tony, talk to us. Anybody out there that doesn't know who you are, where you're from, what you're up to these days, do you mind just giving that 30,000 foot view for the listeners?
Sure. So a little bit about myself. I'm the product of immigrant parents, probably like many of your listeners out there. My parents came from, migrated from Europe. You know, they taught me probably pretty much like your audience, right? Go to school, get a good education, you'll get a good job, and you'll be set forever, right?
Yeah.
And so I was handed down those tablets, and that's what I did. I got a mechanical engineering degree, and I got an MBA degree. So I like to think I'm not a dummy. I know how to do a few things. And so here I am, like 4 years out of college, and I get laid off. And I'm like, oh, holy shit, what? This wasn't part of the mantra, right?
Yeah, they didn't tell me this.
Yeah, you know, I thought I was supposed to be set. I have two great degrees and, you know, I'm supposed to be set. But so unfortunately, I wasn't financially independent. It's good that it happened early in my career because now it recalibrates me and, you know, gives me a chance to say, okay, how do I do better and different going forward?
What year was that? That was early. You were young, just out of college, right?
Yeah, 1999, I think it was, 1999. Okay.
So it breaks my heart when people at later stages in life are going through this. I've ran into this multiple times recently, and it's like, oh my God, because it's like they don't know what else to do. They've been doing that industry for such a long time, and now what?
Yeah. Yeah, and I that's a good point. We'll double back to that because I have a great story, a really inspirational and motivational story that I want to share with you about somebody who gave me a call. But so I wasn't financially independent when I got laid off. I had to find another W-2 paying job, which is okay. I don't kick people in the teeth for having a W-2. I mean, yeah, that's okay as long as you're doing something else to improve your cash flow and your situation so you're not always so reliant on that job. So I found another job, but very quickly thereafter, I said, okay, I want to get into real estate. And so I found my first building. And so many people ask me the question like, well, what did you focus on? Was it DSCR? Was it, you know, the cap rate? Was it this? Was it that? Cash on cash return? And I was like, dude, I was so stupid at the time. All I focused on my first building was like how much I was going to make per door. And what I needed to make per door. And I said, okay, I want to cash flow $300 to $400 per door. That was my metric, my only metric. I did not complicate this equation, right? Even though I came with an engineering degree, I was like, let's make this simple, right? You know, kind of the KISS method, right? Keep it simple, stupid. And I was a stupid one because this was my first foray into real estate. So, you know, that was really my start is buying this quad, which, oh, by the way, I still have today. And I'm a long-term investor, but so simultaneously to investing in real estate, I was still working the corporate gig. And I got to a point about 10 years later, after my first deal, about 10 years later, I had enough real estate to replace my income. Cash flow coming in was going to be able to replace my income. So I said, you know, I got to make a decision, either continue the corporate route or just kind of cut that loose and go the real estate route. And so that's what I did. I cut the corporate job loose. I retired at the age of 44 and just went off to kind of do my own thing, which ended up being many things. I've done deep dive studies, education, research into the whole macroeconomics, the whole space of things. And we can talk more about like renter nation.
Yep.
You know, a lot of investors, they just invest, they look at cash flow, they look at cap rates, they look at demographics and things. But there's really a huge underlying problem across this country, multifaceted problem that is driving this renter nation concept. So we can dive into that and talk a little bit about that. So today I have a company called Dirty Boots Capital. We bring in investors, we do coaching, we do so much to help people achieve a life of freedom and abundance. That's what I'm all about, is hugely, you know, around freedom. I want folks to have what I have. I do what I want, go where I want, and, you know, pretty much say what I want because I can. I don't have to buy deals. I buy deals because I like to. I like doing this. I could be sitting on a beach with a drink in my hand, but that's not me. I'm always got to be doing something. So yeah, we're doing deals today. I think just previously I was sharing with you that by the end of this month, we should be closing on a 153 unit property down in Florida, which is pretty exciting. That's going to add to the portfolio and help some investors with some good cash flow and some good appreciation because it's an value add project.
Yep.
So we're super excited about that. We have a great business plan around it. And so we keep looking for more. So yeah, that kind of brings you to today, what we're doing with Dirty Boots Capital.
I love that. And so, you know, multifamily right now, that's your bread and butter, what you like to focus on. Obviously, buying holds, there's no quick fly-by-night type of money. I mean, you could do it with fix and flips. In today's market, it may be a little bit, you know, depends on where you're at. So you prefer buying holds, tax benefits, cash flow.
I do, but I want to, maybe now's a good time for me to double back to that, yeah, to that story I wanted to share with you, because it's, you know, you are absolutely right. Depending on where you are in your stage of life and sure, career,
yeah,
you know, you may be looking back saying, geez, you know, I'm 50 years old. I don't have the energy and the attention to really go and start doing multifamily stuff. I feel like I'm so-called too old. So I had this individual, he called me. And he said, hey, Tony, you know, I know you do this real estate thing and, you know, you do coaching and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, but you know what? Real estate isn't for me. I don't want to be a landlord. I don't want to, you know, kind of get into real estate. That's just not me. And I'm like, that's okay. No problem. But, you know, so why are you calling me?
Yeah.
And so he said, you know, well, you know, I'm 50 years old and I don't have much in terms of retirement saved up, retirement money. So I said, yeah, that's, you know, don't feel ashamed. You're not alone. There's a lot of people in that situation. And so, you know, we started to talk and I said, well, you know what? You're 50 years old. What kind of quality of life do you want to have in retirement? Like, where do you guys like to go to vacation? What are the things you like to do? What quality of life do you want to have? He's like, you know, well, you know, I like to golf, not so much the wife, but I like to golf. So, you know, when we go, we try to, you know, I try to incorporate that into the vacation a little bit. My wife likes the beaches. She likes doing that, going into like the little shops, you know, buying like those seaside type things. And so I said, oh, okay. And so I said, okay, let's stop right there. What if, you know, let's just play this out. Just work with me for a second. I said, what if you bought, say, a property down in like Myrtle Beach, you know, you could do your golfing, you could go down, do some golfing, seaside, your wife can enjoy, you know, the sand and the beaches and whatnot. What if you were to buy like an Airbnb down in that neck of the woods, so you could go down like when you're retired and have that quality of life? You know, don't worry about the, you know, you don't have to be a landlord. There's property managers and companies that do Airbnb management, right? So you don't have to worry about having to rent it out yourself and whether the, you know, the sheets were washed. There's people that do that. So
unclogged toilets.
Yeah. So
they always get scared with that. Yeah.
So he said, okay. So, because he's like, I don't want to deal with tenants, but you won't have to. There's a company you can put in front of it, but it gives you that quality of life because now you can go enjoy it for a week or two or a month, you know, when you're in retirement. And so you have that quality of life. So he's thinking about it and he's like, oh yeah, but my wife likes to go to Florida. Could I buy one in Florida? I'm like, sure you can. We can buy one down there. Okay. And he's like, yeah, but I also like to, I like to fish. I like to do snowmobiling. Could I buy something in Maine? We like to go to Maine. And I'm like, yeah, of course you can. You know, when you're not using it in the summertime, you can rent it out to snowmobilers and skiers. You got to buy the right location. You know, so the point of this whole story, and I know I'm going fast with it, the point of this whole story is by the end of our like 60-minute conversation, he was up to like 5 Airbnbs. A guy who started the conversation who said, I don't want to invest in real estate. Yeah. He was up to 5 Airbnbs. And it wasn't because he was looking at it from the standpoint of, I want a cash flow like a pig. He's like, I just want a better quality of life when I go into retirement.
Yep.
And this afforded him that quality of life he was looking for, right? To be able to travel and do all these different experiences, right? So that's my interesting story with that individual and how it relates differently. It's not always about cash flow. For some others, it's about legacy or it's about quality of life, depending on where they are.
Yep. So, I love that. And I think it's so important and it's really mandatory for you to be focused on that and design your life how you'd like, especially in the retirement years, because it's such a sad situation of most people aren't prepared for retirement anyway, which is one. But if they're relying on somebody else's, you know, their employment by working for somebody else, what are they going to do if they haven't stacked up properly? And, you know, right before, I've seen a couple people recently, right before retirement, where they would have got paid out in full for the rest of their lives, like they got let go about 2 years early. And it's just like, that is outrageous.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing, you know, with all of this is, you know, don't be, and I'm sure your audience, your listeners know about this, right? You know, don't try chasing it. Don't go chasing somebody else's dreams. Like, don't go, like, listen to my story and, like, go chase my dreams. My dreams are my dreams. Like, go figure out what your own dreams are. Like, right. I love to build stuff. I've always, since I was a kid, I love to build stuff. So that's why I went into mechanical engineering, because I could design and build stuff. That was always in me. That's very innate. I like to build businesses. I like to build a real estate portfolio. I like to build stuff. So for me, I'll be doing that until, you know, my last breath on this earth, because that's just who I am. It's not about the money. It's not about, you know, how many units. I know so many people who are like, you know, oh, I got to get to 300 doors or 2,000 doors or whatever the number is. And it's like, why?
Yeah.
Like,
what does that represent? Yeah.
Just because they're trying to chase the next guy in line.
Yep.
Like, well, his dreams are his dreams. You go figure out what your dreams are, right?
That's right.
You know, I think that's a super important component.
I want to go back to when you first got started in real estate, the $300, $400 a month type of cash flow. It was kind of no rhyme or reason for it. Were you running the numbers properly? I assume because of your background in economics and so forth, you probably were, but many people might just think, okay, well, the mortgage is this, you know, it rents out for this. What's the difference? That's my cash flow. Not thinking about vacancies, property management, capital expenditures, you know, like the list goes on, you know, wear and tear, stuff like that. So were you running the numbers correctly is my question.
So probably not.
Yeah. Okay. And nobody does really at first, like nobody really does. You got to learn. You got to take action. That's a big key component. But staying in that fear mode of like, oh, no, I don't want to make the same mistakes. Well, look at where you're at today.
That's a big piece. To learn how to drive, you have to get in the car and drive, right? That's the way you learn. Sure, you can read a book. You know, you can read so many books by Robert Kiyosaki and that talk about real estate. And that's great. Motivation. I encourage folks to do that. The same thing with reading your driver's manual. You should read that as well to get some education. But at the end of the day, you have to get behind that steering wheel, turn that key, and press the accelerator to really get a feel for what driving is like, right?
And so true.
Real estate's the same thing. I mean, don't get me wrong. I made my share of bad decisions and mistakes in real estate. I did, you know, on properties I bought and properties I didn't buy that I'm kicking myself now.
Yeah.
But, you know, going back to the $300 a door number. So for me, where that came from was I looked at, you know, managing a building and I said, you know what? $300 a door, if it's a triplex or a quad, because those were the properties I was looking at, triplex or a quad. I said, that would give me about $1,000 a month or $12,000 a year.
Yep.
And I said, okay, so $12,000 a year, that's about right for me to be able to get involved in this, right? If I ran the numbers and I was only going to make like $3,000 a year, I said, that's more of a headache for $3,000 a year than something I really want to get involved with. So I needed the yearly payout, so to speak, to be healthy enough. So for me, when I looked at it and I said, okay, I can do this, make about 12 grand a year, that feels good to me, I'll do this. And so that's really where the $300 door came from.
I like that. So I take that, I like turn that into basically you valued your time.
Yeah.
You know, you know, 3 grand a year is like, what is this? Instead of 12, 15, you know, 16,000, those are different numbers that, well, okay, now this makes a little bit more sense. I feel like a lot of people out there might not be prepared for that or necessarily ready to value their time in that manner. People are still doing their own work in some cases, which sweat equity can be good and, you know, putting it in yourself. But if you could actually learn how to manage and budget for it properly, outsource it, you could do more deals. So I think there's a lot of power in that.
That's huge. And I'm glad you brought that up, Brandon, because that was actually one of my biggest mistakes when I first started.
What
I did not value my time when it came to property management. I did a lot of things myself, you know, like that, going back to that clogged toilet or that drippy faucet. Again, mechanical engineer. I grew up around, you know, a father who knew how to fix everything under the sun. So I just learned it, you know, kind of organically with my dad. So I had no fear, no intimidation of ripping into something to fix it. My thought was always, hey, it's broke. I can't broke it anymore. It's already broke. Right. So
I can at least examine it and see how it got this way and see what I can do with it. Yeah.
Right. Like, exactly. So as a kind of with that engineering background, I felt like, hey, I can fix these things. Why do I have to pay somebody else? Yep. I didn't understand that component, you know, early on in my real estate investment career. And you're right. It slowed me down. It prevented me from having the time and energy to analyze more deals and go figure out, you know, how do I get capital to close those deals to be able to really just catapult me into just another level. But yeah, that was one of my biggest mistakes. A lot of people ask me what I did wrong, and I share that quite often. You know, focus on where you bring value. For me, I should have been focusing more on the spreadsheets, the analysis piece of it, looking for properties. That's where I was super strong. Not really the property management. You know, fixing a toilet for what back then I could have hired a plumber probably for $75 an hour to go there and do it. I should have just spent the 75, but you know, that's where I was.
No, I love it. I think it's important to acknowledge and realize. So I appreciate the full transparency. While we're on the topic, like any other big catastrophic type of mistakes that you're like, oh man, I wish I didn't learn that. But at the same time, it was like exactly what I needed to take me to the next level, you know, that the listeners could really grasp on and ideally try to save them time, money, and the headache that you went through.
Yeah, you know, so it's not something I necessarily experienced myself firsthand, but I go through it in terms of the coaching that I do with folks to say, you know, hey, how do you want to hold this property? And a lot of folks will be like, you know, well, you know, many are already educated enough that they know they don't want to put it in their name. So some form of an LLC to give some sort of, you know, arm's length distance clearance between them personally and the property. And so we talk about that. And so that's okay if they want to do that. But with that, I say, well, how are you going to do property management? And they're like, well, you know, I'm pretty handy. I can go there and fix a sink or fix a, you know, a railing on a stairwell or something like that. And I'm like, well, careful. Holding a property in an LLC and now you going there and fixing things, they conflict. Because if you go to a property as playing the role of the property manager and you're fixing that hand railing and you think it's fixed and somebody later that day falls on that set of stairs and, you know, starts a lawsuit, you personally are liable because you fixed that railing, right? You can have the best LLC or whatever in place, but because you personally fixed that railing, you're going to be liable for that person who fell on that staircase, you know, for, you know, whether it was, you know, intentional or not, you're going to be held liable. So, you know, as I went through the years of doing this, I realized that and I said, you know, I just have to pay up the professionals.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I don't want to be the one holding the bag, even though I know how to do it. I don't want to physically be going there and doing most of these things myself because the liability these days is just too huge.
Yeah.
So
hey,
I get quite often.
You get the licensed contractor that's already, you know, they've done it a million times. That's their bread and butter, what they do. They're insured with it. And you have receipts to, you know, confirm that they're the ones that did this. So it gives you that extra layer of protection with your entity and the way that you have your trust and entity structure kind of within your holding. So I love that piece. And I think, you know, adding on to what we were just talking about, getting yourself outside of it so that you can really treat it more as a business instead of you in the business. It's being outside of that. You can really start structuring it and focusing on what you do best, which is getting more deals and taking down more territory. Speaking of which, I wanted to ask, you know, how do you get your lead generation coming in for new opportunities, but also what inspired you to get into real estate in the first place? Like, was there friends, family members, teachers, or somebody in your mentors that kind of guided you that way?
Yeah. So my mother and father had a multifamily that we grew up in. It was a 6-unit building. Nice. And so we grew up, you know, on the first floor, very traditional for immigrants coming to this country. We grew up in a very immigrant dominated neighborhood. And most of those owners, you know, came from different countries overseas in Europe and whatnot. So, yeah, you know, my dad would remodel an apartment. He would go fix something, a boiler, change out a water heater. You know, guess who the person was handing him the tools?
Yeah, yeah.
That was me, right? Yeah. So that progressed to, you know, installing toilets, fixing faucets, doing everything. And I was like a 12-year-old kid, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, I was kicking and screaming, you know, the whole way. Believe me, at the time, I wasn't like, oh, this is great. Let's go fix toilets, right? Yeah. You know, but now I have such a huge appreciation for that time spent, for that education, I call it, spent with my dad learning those things.
Yep.
Because now, you know, I'm going into a property. I'm analyzing properties, you know, from a lot of different perspectives. That's why I call myself Dirty Boots Capital, because I got to get my boots dirty on financial statements, demographic reports, migration studies, you know, soil samples, not just the actual property itself and walking the property. There's a lot of ways to get your boots dirty that you need to be successful. But when I go onto the property, I can have very, very, very good conversations with property managers.
Yep.
They kind of look at me like, Tony, you like,
this isn't your first day. Yeah.
Have you been a property manager? And it's like, no, I grew up around this for the most part. So that has been hugely beneficial for me in the role I play today with my partners in terms of doing deals. So that was really my inspiration. My mother and father were already doing it. I saw the trials and tribulations that came with it. So that's where I was able to look at it and say, for me to really get into this, I want to make at least 12 grand a year. Yep. 'Cause I knew what came with it. Some of the BS.
Yeah.
So I said, I'm not going to do this for 3 grand. It needs to be healthier. So that's how that worked out. As far as where, so today, I won't talk about the past because that's ancient history, but today, where we find deals, so I work closely with family offices out of New York, New Jersey, who are so ingrained with like the off-market community that is where we are finding deals through the family offices. And so the role I play is helping to analyze those deals. I go wherever that property is. We walk it. We talk about it. Look at it. What the opportunity is. Whether it's a true opportunity. I see too many folks out there like saying, "Hey, we're going to do this value add, and it's going to add $150 to the, you know, to each unit." And I'm like, "Yeah, that could be true, but did you realize like that $150 per unit? That's going to get eaten up by your property tax going up, and also by your insurance going up. So you can market it that way, saying you're going to increase." By $150 a unit. And maybe that's true. Maybe that will be pure cash flow and profit. But we're in a different world right now. Property taxes continue to go up. Any property owner, I think, has seen that in the last couple of years. I mean, I certainly have, both here and in Florida. So property taxes are going up and insurance is going up. And we don't really see that stopping anytime soon. So anyway, I digress. So really, that's where we're getting our deal flow is from those connections.
Is that more of like a wholesaler type of company, or are these guys typically partner up with you on some of these deals as well?
Yeah, they partner up with us because we bring a lot of equity to the table to help them close. So it's a very good marriage because like I know the guys on the equity side, but they don't know real estate.
Yeah.
Whereas I know real estate, so I'm able to bridge that gap, that comfort level to say, you know, obviously they trust me. And so I can walk and talk a property and understand those dynamics and where the risks are, as well as the opportunities. So I have that experience over the last 20 plus years. So then I'm able to bridge that gap with the equity partners to say, yeah, this is a good deal, or no, it isn't. I mean, not every deal is a good deal that is brought forward. There was one in Tampa that was brought forward. Beautiful building, beautiful neighborhood, class A building, you know, but Tampa is becoming so saturated with availability. The absorption rate is getting worse. And over like the next 5 years, there's like, I don't know, like hundreds of thousands of units that are coming available.
And yeah, it's crazy.
Great. I love Tampa. Love going there. But I'm not sure I want to invest in a Class A property there when so many more units are coming online. To me, that was a little too high risk. So not everyone's a home run. You got to ferret those out. And that's again, you got to get your boots dirty. You got to go out there. You got to look at it. Look at how many permits are being pulled, what the absorption rate is. Look at the 5-year outlook and, you know, try to make sense of this.
I love it. So, Tony, you are the money man then. So you know how to raise capital pretty well at this point over the last couple years you've been doing it. So what has been the best strategy for you to, I guess, build? Is it just the brand awareness of letting people know, hey, this is what I do, I'm actively in it, and then your education level of going, you know, above and beyond to really deep dive into the nitty gritty, the work that nobody else really wants to themselves into, the economics, to see, you know, the pros and cons. And then once they see all the work that you put in, they have more confidence, trust, and awareness of like, hey, this guy knows what he's doing. Let me, you know, I don't want to do that work, I'm lazy, let me give my money to Tony. He knows what he's doing, he can bring it back to me.
Yeah. So one of the things is, you know, as far as raising capital, don't make it harder than it has to be. So go where the money is. And so the money used to come from like individuals, right? I've done syndication deals, GP, LP, the whole bit. But that's pretty much, that's become a lot harder these days because a lot of, you know, headlines, you know, kind of scare people.
Fear.
So a lot of the mom and pops that you used to get, you know, 50, 100, 200, 250 from out of whack are pulling back, have pulled back, and they have been for a long time. So raising capital in that way has, I'm going to say, stopped. We don't raise capital that way anymore. I mean, if somebody wants to reach out to me and give me a check for $250, we'll probably take it.
I won't deny you, all right?
I won't deny you, right? but we don't raise capital that way anymore. We actually work with, and so this is huge value for your audience right here if they're looking to raise capital. Create relationships with RIAs, registered investment advisors, right? Find out who the RIAs are in your neighborhood. Reach out to them. Take them out to lunch, dinner, coffee, whatever it is. Create a relationship with them. You know, we work with groups that manage like $24 billion with a B. And so we just work with them. We tell them our story, right? We don't come in with like, you know, guns a-blazing or trying to be like the smartest person in the room. It's just like, you know, hey, I think you and your audience has a really good idea of who Tony Lopes is, right? I mean, I grew up around this for a long time. I like to think I know my shit, right? I'm not here to be like with a huge ego or anything, but we know how to do this.
You put in the work. I mean, you can't deny you put in the work. Anybody talking to you will be able to recognize it and give you the credit that you deserve for it. That's just what it is.
Yeah. So we want to help people, right? Yep. We truly want to help people. So we just share the story with them that, you know, hey, we created a fund. My partner actually did, because that's an area where I'll be honest, I'm not smart in terms of how to create a real estate fund. So he created a real estate fund, which is great. You go do that. I'll go do what I'm good at. And so he created that and he got it put onto the to the Schwab platform and the Pershing platform. And so as we talk with these RIAs and we tell them our story and what we're trying to do, and if they want to invest in our fund, they're able to do that through the Schwab or Pershing platform because they can see the fund there and they can, you know, divert funds from their investors to that. For the most part, these folks have, I don't want to say 100% say in where their investor funds go, but they're a huge influence. So if we can help the RIAs understand our motivation and our story and how we're out there really trying to help people, the funds typically flow pretty well. So that's how we're raising funds these days, is through those relationships, right? Raising capital is a relationship game. If people don't know you, if they don't trust you, you know, hey, I come to the table, I talk with a Boston accent, you know, this is pretty much usually what I look like. Maybe sometimes I put on a sports jacket, but that's pretty much what
you're I'm not giving you a dollar, Tony. I'm just kidding.
No, we're not out to like, you know, be something we're not.
Yeah.
I mean, we're just truly trying to help people. And these RIAs mostly just have access to REITs.
Yep.
To invest in real estate. And a REIT doesn't give you the full potential of like holding a real asset like real estate. You don't get the appreciation to the degree of what we do. You don't get the depreciation. So there's just so much more that we offer in terms of something better than a REIT.
I love that. And I think there's a lot of credibility too when, you know, some of those other members that you're spreading the word to, they get to go on Schwab account and see, you know, that it's on there, it's an option and something that they can invest in. So I love that.
It's work. It's work. Don't get me wrong. You know, like you said, it's work. We put in the time and energy and the money to do this.
Not cheap to do that.
No, sir. No, sir. But yeah, it's legit. And you know, we jump through all the wickets with the SEC and with, you know, all attorneys and everything. So
I love it. Talk to me about this recent deal. You know, how you're making sense of it. It's 150 units. You're about to close on that. What kind of pain point were they in? If so, I assume with the market rates and so forth, they were probably in possibly a little pickle that I want to hear about, but maybe not. So it was all within their plans. Who knows? But then after that, let's talk about the Renters Nation.
Yeah, sure. So this particular 150 some odd units is in Florida, the original owner. And so what they had done, this is really interesting. So it's an off-market property.
What year is it?
Vintage 1970.
Okay.
Wow. So it was built over a period of time. The main building, which has a house attached to it. So again, vision like almost like a mom and pop who, you know, was like living in the house. They had this additional building that had a couple of units. And so they were able to cash flow, small little thing. And then what they did was they built another building and added more rental units, like, you know, 10 or 50 more units. And then they cash flowed, they did well. Next phase came along and they built another 50 units.
So that this sounds like Texas almost, of like you just, you know, the zoning. You can build a sky rise right here and then a little dingy, whatever.
Yeah, gotta love Florida.
Yeah, I love it. That's great. That's cool.
So it was, you know, really a mom and pop who had developed it over time.
Cool.
Through getting the cash flow through that property. So here they have now 153 units. They're at an age they want to exit. God bless them. Family doesn't want to take it over, which I can understand. What typical family would want to take over 153 units? Not typical that you find that a son or a daughter that wants to do that.
Is there mortgages on it or is it free and clear?
No, there's still mortgages. Okay. Yeah.
I didn't know if they were crazy or not, or if they were intelligently or what.
They're fine. I mean, if they wanted to hold it, they could hold it, but they want to exit. They're older. They want a certain quality of life. They don't want to be kind of around this anymore.
Yes.
Okay. So here we come in, we look at the property and we see that there's such tremendous opportunity because, right, they're thinking about it like, okay, this is a 1970 vintage property that we developed over time. They never really put, and this isn't, you know, kicking them in the teeth or anything. They just calibrated a certain way to what was, you know, like 30, 40 years ago. But that's not what renters are looking for today. So we walk in and we see like tremendous opportunity. Like the clubhouse has tremendous space. It's just not built out and utilized the way you attract renters today. Like, sure. We're going to add a fitness center in there with the proper flooring and wall-to-ceiling mirrors, everything nice and clean, great lighting, great, you know, you walk in there and you're going to be inspired to work out by the lighting and the paint scheme and the whole bit, right? You know, not a lot of money is going to go into that particular, but some to be able to, you walk in and you feel encouraged to work out. Yep. Right. The same thing with some of the other wasted space. We're going to create like a business center, especially today with a lot of people, remote workers.
Yep.
So we're going to create, you know, put a couple of computers in there, put a couple of printers in there, you know, so folks that, you know, work remotely, if for some reason they want to get out of their unit and come here and do some printouts or whatever, they can. You know, that's, again, low cost. We'll do some great lighting and a nice, you know, invigorating paint scheme in there. Very comfortable environment. We'll put a conference room table and in another area should somebody want to have like a conference or a birthday party or something. So there's a lot of wasted space when we walk in and, you know, a ton of value add we can do there. And that's just with the clubhouse. You know, we're talking about putting in like a little putting green, a little greenery outside where people can like come and, you know, just hang out and enjoy as a community.
Sure. I love that.
So that's, you know, so that's that. And in the units, again, some of them are what we call classic. So more vintage and they need to be updated. So we're going to do that. There's, you know, ton of upside on the rent, because again, these are owners who are still thinking like, you know, oh, I can't go up more than $50 a month every time I turn a unit.
Yep.
And it's like, well, that's not the market today.
Yeah, that's not the market. Yep. But if you leave it in that condition still, maybe it is. You know, like, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're going to give, you know, some love to this place. We're going to spend some capital, which is...
How long do you think it's going to take?
So probably 3 years for us to fully get through the, you know, all the classic units and everything. The, as you know, there's a process, you know, with folks moving out and whatnot, but we just, you know, and we're not here to like impact anybody. I mean, we're not going to be moving people out, so to speak. I mean, or forcing people out. It's just like as units become available, we're going to upgrade them.
Yeah. So I love it.
Yeah.
Very cool. So talk to me about, you know, the economics and the Renters Nation.
Yeah.
What are you talking about, my friend? There's a lot of, I won't go down a rabbit hole. I was about to go down a rabbit hole with some certain things, but there's a lot of what the government has talked about the last couple of years of like, you know, what they would like to see in the next 10 years and of turning more into a renter's nation and a lot of people just renting versus buying. Talk to me about ownership in real estate versus the, you know, what is actually happening with renters right now.
Yeah. So I like talking about Renters Nation, but it's one of those things that I wish I didn't have to.
Yeah.
Because this is one of those things that does steal people's freedom, you know, and does steal their wealth. Because we do know that owning a home, we've seen it for generations since the beginning of time, owning real estate has been one of the best, if not the best, way to create wealth for yourself. A lot of us and a lot of your listeners probably seen it with their parents where, you know, they bought a ranch for, you know, I don't know, $15,000 way back in the day, right? 15 grand.
And it's not like that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're selling it for like, I don't know, 400 or 500. Now, granted, they did work to it over the years and I'm not, you know, gonna, you know, dismiss that. But it's one of those things where that's a nice little adder to your retirement egg.
That's right.
So that helps. So with Renter Nation, where we are today, when you look at some of the data, like we are at, I think it's 53% of young people today are still living with mom and dad. So
53%.
And that's the age group of 18 to 29 year olds.
29 year old. Oh my God. That no, it can't 53%. Be.
The highest in history, Brandon, not even during the world wars, the highest we ever reached was like 42%. And so, you know, this isn't, you know, like Tony Lopes data. I mean, this was research done by the Pew. I believe it was the Pew's Research Institute.
Yep.
And so we're at the highest point ever where young people are living at home with mom and dad. And it kind of makes sense when you look at things and you say, well, look at that, you know. God, everywhere you look, there's housing affordability issues. Every house they build today, I understand. It needs to cost $400,000, $500,000 to build these homes. I get it. But those aren't affordable for young people who are coming to the table with student loans in many cases, right? They need to pay those. Or maybe not with Biden. Maybe he'll forgive all that.
Yeah. Somebody's paying for it.
Yeah, but that's a point being that demographic, when you just look at that demographic, they aren't going to become homeowners.
Oh.
They're going to become renters. And when you look at the statistic for what the average age of the first time home buyer is.
Yeah.
What would your guess be? Like the average age of the first time home buyer?
I don't know. 35.
Close. 31.
31, okay.
Yeah, it's increased to 31. Yeah, see, I thought it might have been higher too, because again, it's an affordability thing.
Yeah.
But it's also a societal thing. When we look at families, and this is a whole, you know, rabbit hole of things, you know, when we look at the family unit, we no longer have a family unit like it used to be 50 years. People graduate from high school, you know, high school sweethearts, they get together, they have a kid or two, right? And they're a family unit. And now you have like two incomes that can purchase a home. It's not like that anymore. Now you have like, you know, predominantly single women, you know, buying homes because not for nothing, a lot of men suck these days. We've had such a degradation of the male population for different reasons that, you know, the female population, go women, they've really stepped up and they really go after, you know, primarily wanting a home because chances are maybe they have a child or two or something, and they just want to provide that environment because that's a nurturing environment. That's what they grew up around, and they want to provide that same nurturing safety environment for their kids. So right there in that like short little segment, we could delve into like an hour's worth of detail, but those are some of the things. The other thing, you know, is, you know, we talk about the government. We are at the highest point with federal debt in this country. The Fed is trying to get that down, but still, it's still, you know, near historical levels, and we're paying on a daily rate. Last time I checked earlier this year was like $1.8 billion with a B dollars of interest payment, interest only, each and every day.
Yeah.
$1.8 billion with a B every day.
Yep.
And so when you look at that, that money needs to come from somewhere. And if the federal government is paying that, there's less money available through federal programs to flow down to the state levels. Now, some of that may be made up with money printing or what have you, but, you know, less money to the state levels. And even The Hill, the magazine, The Hill, did a article on this, and they were urging states, do not rely on the federal government for flow down of money.
Yeah.
States, you got to look for a different way to get your income. And so a lot of that is going to come from property taxes, unfortunately. And so property taxes are going to rise as a result. And that, even if interest payments come down and mortgages come down, you're still going to have this affordability problem because of property taxes going up, you know? And so we see that happening today. I've seen it on my properties over the last 2 years, continuing to go up. And so, yeah, people are going to struggle from the, you know, I even see posts on Facebook these days. I'm like, I'm scrolling through and they're like, you know, hey, my mortgage interest rate hasn't changed, but my payment has gone up $300 a month. What does anybody know why that would happen? And I'm like, yeah, probably your property taxes have gone up and
your insurance
balance the books and your insurance. Yep. So yeah, there's a couple of dynamics there that are just going to keep us in this affordability, you know, zone problem until cities and towns start allowing developers to build more property, more units on a parcel of land. You know, I have a property where, you know, I have 5 units and it's on 1.5 acres. And I went to the town and I want to build it out. I want to put like another, you know, 10 units or something on there. And they're like, no, you're already past the maximum density allowed in that area. And I'm like, how can that be? One street over, somebody has like 30 units on their property, similar to mine. Like, why can't I build my, oh, you're in a different zone. And I knew that, but it becomes, they need to become more open to changing the density requirements to allow more housing to be built. Because if we don't, the houses will continue to say $400,000, $500,000 for a starter home. And that doesn't solve the need.
Yeah.
So between political pressures with, you know, this high federal debt, that's going to create issues at our level with property taxes. You have political things that even at the city and town level where they don't want to change the rules for density. We have societal impacts going on, not just with how families are formed or not formed today, creating pressures on the household budgets, less money for a home because there's only one income, but also from the perspective of today, society wants, you know, the younger people want experiences. And this isn't good or bad. I'm not saying this is like, you know, I'm not kicking anybody in the teeth. I'm just saying younger people, typically, they don't want to spend their weekends cleaning gutters, painting trim, and mowing the lawn.
Yep.
Traditionally, that's like, you know, not where they want to focus. They want to be out having experiences, and, you know, I can't blame them. And so when you don't want to do that, that does not tend to make you an owner. That makes you a renter. You don't want to do those things. You're going to be renting. And so there's certain societal impacts that are going on. There's also energy, right? I could talk all day about this stuff, so stop me when we've reached a limit. But energy is not getting any cheaper. We've already passed peak production, peak energy production when it comes to oil and natural gas. We're actually rolling over the curve. So it takes more barrels of oil today to pull oil out of the ground than it ever has. So oil is getting more expensive. Natural gas as a byproduct is getting more expensive. So things like doing asphalt driveways just gets more expensive because it's an oil-based product. Things like shingles for your roof, asphalt architectural shingles, get more expensive. Things like siding and rugs and, you know, everything that goes into your house is based on energy.
Yep.
And so that's just going to make, again, home affordability an issue going forward, which again will trend us more towards more people renting than actually buying a home because they can't. So there's a whole bunch of things between energy, societal factors, political factors.
Yeah.
Just a lot.
It's a mess. There's so many things that are really putting more pressure on, you know, actually more renters. And the simple fact is, I've said this from like day one, that if the average person, just everybody, if everybody tries to go after just like three properties for themselves, I believe very similar to you, Tony, in, you know, residential multifamily, get 3-4 units. And if you get 2-3 of those, my God, you're going to be set. And just hang on to them. Like, don't sell them. Hang on to it. Handle your business, set it up for success, and what it will do for you in the longevity of things. It's going to go up in appreciation. You're going to be able to leverage from it. You're going to have tax benefits. You're going to have cash flow for the rainy day. If you know that can be your retirement in so many ways. It could bless you. It could be your saving grace if your employer lets you go. Like, if you're sick, if something happens in life, because life happens. So, you know, you got to be prepared for it and not have all your eggs in one basket relying on just your employer. If you really focus on getting just a couple properties under your belt, it will change your life in so many ways.
Yeah, I love that. I love how you put that, right? You don't have to be like going big and trying to get 100
units
under your belt. Just get a couple of properties just to protect yourself in some way, you know. And so I think people can now see why I don't like talking about Renter Nation, because it's kind of like a doom and gloom, and I'm not.
Yeah, it doesn't feel good, right? But it's important. They need to know. You know, it doesn't feel good.
We need to know these sort of things, because now when we talk to investors,
yes,
we can talk with integrity and with purpose and with passion to say, this is why rental real estate, that residential multifamily is a good investment. I can go into any room and I can, as we're talking here, I mean, I don't need charts. I don't need, you know, different things. Like, I can just talk to it just because, you know, I research it and I know it well. And to those factors are why we need to be in residential multifamily. And I'm not looking for investors here. You know, we're just yakking. We connected on social media.
Yeah, yeah.
and this was great. I'm happy to be here and you know, just kind of have this conversation. But I mean, I'm not necessarily like doing this because I'm raising funds. I don't need.
Yeah, we're good.
People's money, we're good.
Yeah.
Right? If you want to send some, we'll take some.
Yeah.
But no, it's definitely one of those things where we need to understand these factors, why owning residential multifamilies is important.
So important.
Our portfolio.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Tony, you just gave an hour of your time, incredible knowledge. You are a man of wealth in many different areas and giving heart. I love it. I appreciate your time greatly. I want to know how the listeners can get a hold of you, but also, because you just gave an hour of your time, what could either myself or even the listeners do to give back to you?
Thank you so much, Brandon. I really appreciate your time here today, allowing me to be here and just kind of pontificate about different things. You know, I'm like no other. I get out of bed, I put my pants on the same way as everybody else. I'm not special. I just try to figure this stuff out the best that I can. So if folks want to reach out to me, the best thing they can do is just go to my website, dirtybootscapital.com, kind of see what we do, who we are, you know, maybe take a look at some of the blog posts, subscribe to the newsletter if you're interested, you know, that sort of stuff. If you want to reach out to me personally and ask questions, that's fine too. Tony Lopes at dirtybootscapital.com is my email address. Tony Lopes, Lopes with an S, Tony Lopes at dirtybootscapital.com. just shoot me an email. Love to have conversations with people. So yeah, that's the best way.
Love it. Well, Tony Lopes, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate your time greatly. It was an honor to have you on and get to chit chat about all the craziness in the world, but all the good things too, and all the learning curves that you've already been through and where you guys are going. It's super exciting and definitely motivational. So by all means, guys, reach out to Tony, Wealth of Knowledge. And like I said, he definitely can help point you in the right direction if you have any questions. If you guys want to get a hold of me, you can always do so on Instagram. It is Brandon Elliott Investments. Otherwise, check out our new page on Instagram. It's Credit Council Elite. You can always connect with me on facebook.com/Brandon Elliott Investor, or check out our website, creditcouncilelite.com. That's www.creditcouncilelite.com. We are teaching business owners just like you how to be able to get up to $500,000 in the next 30 to 90 days at 0% interest. That's $200,000, $300,000, or even $500,000 in the form of 0% interest, so that you can grow and scale your business or jump into real estate like we have. So check out creditcouncilelite.com. You can get more information on there and then sit down with us to get a second opinion today. If you haven't already subscribed to get the newest notification for the podcast, what are you waiting for? Do that right here, right now. I greatly appreciate it. You'll get the newest notification every single Monday to Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast. That's Ready, Set, Go REI Podcast. And after listening to a few episodes, leave that 5-star review. Greatly appreciate all the love, all the support. As always, you guys are amazing. We'll catch you on the next episode. Till next time, God bless. And Tony, appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been another episode of Ready, Set, Go Real Estate Investing Podcast, brought to you by Brandon Elliott. For more information, please visit BrandonElliottInvestments.com. Also, please don't forget to like, share, and leave a comment below. Thanks again for joining. Until next time, God bless.